Welcome to Business Second Opinion. I'm Carol Sanford.
And I'm Zach Swartout.
The purpose of this podcast is to explore designs and practices in business, to understand where they are sourced, usually unexamined. That is, who comes up with these ideas and how so? As well as we examine the effects of these work designs and practices. In other words, what are they creating as outcomes and consequences in the end? We look at the myths embedded in many of the practices, and we offer ideas on what to do instead based on if you were going to source it from a different place and evaluate the pursuit of different effects.
This is the third in a group of four podcasts where we're going to look at work design, its past and future, and how to create a workplace that serves workers, the work, and the reason for the work. Our last two sessions looked at the history of work design over centuries, and then specifically and more closely at the shortfalls of holacracy. You may have been asking yourself, what gives us the credibility to do something like this? The Carol Sanford Institute has designed and redesigned businesses and workplaces for over four decades in a co-creative process with CEOs from Fortune 500 companies, as well as entrepreneurial businesses. They even built systems very similar to Holacracy over 35 years ago and learned the errors of that firsthand. Our reflections are different than those offered in popular business journals on Holacracy and alternative work designs. We see the many shortfalls of the old traditional organizational theories that the Holacracy, but we also see the errors in most of the modern pop psychology ideas, including Holacracy. And we have hundreds of case stories to share. To get a better view online, go ahead and take a look at carolsanfordinstitute.com and pick up a copy of Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business, where there are 15 more case studies and ideas in practice. You can always get a contrarian view on business through Business Second Opinion. And we can tell you why we think it needs a second opinion.
This week, we're examining why Holacracy is not really radically different in many ways than traditional hierarchical organizations, even if they make them flatter. They may even make some things worse and not deliver on what is promised because of the design. It is very expensive to make organizational change. We think it would be helpful to people to have more than a template on what to have offered to them, but instead to have a set of principles against which you could examine all these ideas that show up as alternatives. We want them also based on science, and we can offer that along with our five decades of practice, research, and evaluation.
There are many criticisms of Holacracy out there right now, and many of those criticisms have their own problems in the foundation of their argument. On Business Second Opinion, we speak often about how the paradigm you use to examine a set of practices and the hidden premises and beliefs that paradigm holds will determine what you can see. For example, the most well-used paradigm for design in business these days is what we call extract value. Extract value holds that you get the most you can out of people for the least cost and the highest return. Since this paradigm comes from thinking that people are machines, like computers, it critiques Holacracy as not serving the specific results they use to assess work design, which is really about a narrow focus on reliability and adaptability and getting to a better bottom line. The paradigm ends up framing the interpretation you have regarding that which we observe both in others' words and actions, even outcomes we can or cannot perceive. Our paradigm causes us to fall prey to confirmation bias. We confirm what we already believed with others' words intended to change us. Paradigms, mindset, and worldviews are the psychological gravitational force behind this. Our intention is to improve your capacity for discernment by watching our own paradigms and by watching how they affect others in real time.
One of the most surprising revelations in reading all of these critiques on Holacracy from places like Harvard Business Review and Strategy and Business is how the evaluation of each is offered from a particular mindset that they can't see. They seem to be trying to pull the efforts like Holacracy back into the traditional worldview rather than critique them against what could be even more effective. It's always two choices. It's either self-managing, which means people have no supervisors, or it's top-down managing. But then what else could you compare it to? They seem to be saying, but there is a third choice if you want to go anywhere else, but you need the principles to do that. You do have to stop trying to achieve certain things, though. If you assume the problem is really the idea of hierarchy itself, that people are reporting to other people, then that's where the mind goes. So all the design is about that, quote, problem, which is a particular paradigm, problem solving. And you have to figure out how to get past that. So you end up focusing on only two questions. How do we get rid of levels in the organization, and how do we organize to get the work done without anyone giving oversight? Now, I have to agree that I believe hierarchies are problematic. And one of the reviews, they said hierarchies are 150 years old. I think Gary Hamel said that. No, actually, they're about 600 to 800 years old, because they go all the way back to kings and queens and to hierarchy in the church. Particularly, they are conceived as layers of people. And when it comes to work, they're about getting work done. And actually, they're doing exactly the same set of work, but they break it down into smaller and smaller pieces. That's what a hierarchy means. This makes it really hard for people to see the whole of anything. So it's really hard for them to be making decisions and to know how they're affecting something upstream and downstream from them, or something more strategic than their tactical work. You also have to change what you think as the value of hierarchy, which it's probably be surprising to people that we're going to come back and suggest a particular kind of value of hierarchy, but it's not about hierarchy and power over people. It's what we're able to think about as having more power over other ideas, and how you can have that become the hierarchy of how you organize. Come back to us on the next episode and you'll hear more about that. But we promise some principles for work design. So the first one is that you want to connect the business and everybody in it to the world. And that means whether you're talking about frontline people in customer service or sales, whether you're talking about manufacturing on a shop floor, or you're talking about software engineers, the back end, you want all of them to be connected directly to the world of business. And by that, I mean the industry, the market, and the global dynamics in it. We put together, when we're working with businesses, just to give you an example of how you do that, an overarching team, which is rotating in membership, but it's reflective of the whole of the marketplace, the whole of the organization. We call it a core team. It's core team because it's responsible for the core purpose or core process of the whole of the business and its place in the market. It is responsible for developing the overall corporate direction and getting that delivered. The form of strategy that they work to keep the business true to, that's tied to its essence. One of the biggest problems that core teams have to manage is that people start wandering as they see trends coming in. They become diverted, even though they don't really fit their corporate direction. They watch competitors doing things. They hear their customers talk about what competitors are doing. And slowly, they lose their ability to focus. And along with it, they lose their distinctiveness of their place in the market and space. Core teams also, and hopefully you're seeing how this connects to the outside world, they're looking at their place in the market. They also do something that most businesses leave out completely, and Holacracy has been critiqued for doing this. The core team keeps global imperatives in mind and embed them in strategy. So they're working on everything from social justice to planetary viability. They embed that in the work, and they make sure it's front of mind for people. They meet on a recurring basis, working on the business and focusing consideration on the choices the organization has to make to ensure that it's successful or effective, we might say, financially, in the market, technologically, and with its organizing effectiveness. That's a very different role than a circle, which is working on work. The team, if you think about it, this core team that we build into our organization is metaphorically writing the boundaries of the business. I grew up on a ranch, so I can relate to they're metaphorically riding it. And they're making sure that there are fences and gates, fences where they need to be and gates where they need things to flow in and out and serve stakeholders. These core teams are made up of respected leaders from all levels and functions. And they come to be on these teams because they're thrilled, because they can add more and they can learn. They have fiduciary responsible leaders from the top of an organization, but they're without having power over the people who are there. Now, this core team membership is an auxiliary role in addition to the ones people do running the business, but it is not designed to coordinate work that is happening. It's designed to make sure strategy and conversation are happening from top to bottom. And there's a set period of time that they're on, and there is rotation of 20 to 30%, at least on an annual basis and sometime more often. So let me give you an example of what this core team would do. So Merida, in its strategy work with the core team, had been, as an organization, doing really phenomenal design of textiles, beautiful rugs. They had craftsmen who were beyond reproach in what they were able to do, most of whom were immigrants that had come in from countries where weaving and dyeing was a very sophisticated kind of process that had been carried on for millennia. And as they looked at it, what they were doing was sending these extraordinary pieces of work out into box stores like Pottery Barn, Crate and Barrel, without even a brand or name tag on it. And I'm sure you can immediately imagine the kind of margins they got for that. And certainly no one knew who they were. In doing strategy and really looking at what's the essence of Merida, this ability to create design rapidly, uniquely, without having to repeat itself because of the skills they had and their contacts with the market where there were high-end buyers via interior designers, woke them up one day and they realized, given who all of their buyers were, they should move their strategy from being more of a commodity that went into box stores to what's called a bespoke design, where they could work with each decorator depending on the kind of nature of work they were doing, but they could work with their local folks and they could create a whole different market or help their designers create these different markets. That was work a core team did, not a senior top level, senior executive group, but a group that was made up of people who were the immigrants, who were on the machines, who actually knew how to build and change the machines, came to understand what it was that they were really unique at, what their essence was, and repositioned themselves in the market. So that's the kind of work that a core team does. There's a second principle work design ought to examine. It ought to ensure that you're seeing and working with wholes, not parts. The idea that was built into work design in traditional organization was things were broken down into parts and pieces, and Holacracy doesn't change that. They actually assume that the work they're doing, the major change that's happening, is the work they're already doing without supervision, and they will improve that. What we want to do, and we suggest, is you move from organizing around the work itself, which they're doing, and the people who are doing it organizing, to organizing around customer nodes in the market, which draw from the people who are actually doing that. We create something called market field teams, which now have a 60-year history, even before me, because I learned it from my P&G, the leaders of the P&G system, which initiated most of this. I guess all of it. The machine era, you know, brought all these things to smaller and smaller parts, and Holacracy didn't change that. It left it in just way too small a chunk. So we organize people so that you have groups who are working based on core characteristics of particular customer groups. So if we go back to the case of Merida, they had four different major buyer nodes that shared the kind of values. And one of them was much more this specific bespoke group, wanting everything bespoke. Another was that they wanted this eclectic feel. Another wanted to set trends. And they realized that if they organized all of the people in their organization to be on one of those teams, that they became their strategist, their research and development team, they would, on an ongoing basis, know more about where the customer could go in their own market than the customer themselves could. And as we created that organization called these market field teams, which were each around a particular customer group, they became responsible for the success of that customer. Everyone in the organization is on one of those teams. They strategize to get better outcomes for them. And the other thing that's very exciting about these market field teams is if anything is changing with any of these customer groups, because they're made up of people who reflect the entire organization, every operational team, every functional team, even the specialty groups and accounting and so forth, everybody's on one of those teams, is everybody knows customers well, plus Think how fast you can take the ideas that are happening in that market field team straight to a team who is running a mill or a loom or a process of delivery. It is known within less than 24 hours, time for people to go and come back. So the challenge is to move away from organizing around existing work and have the people who do the work talking to each other and organizing in the teams that are wrapped around the customers' lives and their lived lives. In Seventh Generation, we conceived of whole new lines of products and service offerings because the teams were working very close to this lived experience of their customers. It's how the whole set of products that came about for people who have chemical sensitivities, another set around natural parents. There were each one of these market field teams begin to see what was it that these really valued, not based on demographics, but based on how they lived their lives. This is the second role. So the first role people can join besides being on their work team, besides the core team, is they do and are required to be one of these market field teams. There is another one which we're going to talk more about in the next episode, but and it's going to be around how do you build innovation into support customer evolution and make it a requirement in everyone's job. It's not enough to just do your job well. You are required to figure out how to evolve the customer, and that's what we'll be talking about next week.
I want to remind everyone about how to participate in the show by joining in our quiz on SurveyMonkey each week. This is where you can offer articles for review from HBR or other popular business written media. Find the link at businesssecondopinion.com. It's more fun to listen when you participate. To get educated about Carol's approach to critiquing popular ideas, you can also download her chapter at businesssecondopinion.com. Plus, there's a weekly drawing for a free copy of Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business. You can qualify for the drawing by participating in the quiz, write comments, or recommend an article for Carol to review. So where did ideas like Holacracy come from? We know they came from the software design world, which is where Brian Robertson first worked on developing it. But where else did the ideas about how people work best together come from that kind of underpin Holacracy? Daniel Pink did a great job in his book Drive to help us understand how incentives have very little value or effectiveness in motivating people. Research actually shows that if you pay people by piecework, for each little piece of work they do, whether that's a call they complete or some other aspect of their work, incentives actually do work. But for anything complex where discernment is needed, then incentives actually work against that effectiveness. This is an idea we had been advocating for almost 50 years, but it took a journalist to get this idea out. But as a journalist, he feels obligated to explain why and what to do, in the process introducing some grave class one errors into the work design. He advocated giving people feedback instead, which we spoke about extensively in episode number 108 and in Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business. To recap, by the way, feedback is not only not helpful, but it undermines most of what makes humans innovative and come alive. But he also formed ideas, seemingly out of thin air, about what's important to humans, far more than incentives and rewards. Three things he offered: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Although they are related to what drives humans, it is not precise enough and has led to a lot of misunderstanding. What research and practice tells us drives humans might be said to be, first, contributing uniquely alongside others to real outcomes which I can experience in my role. Second, developing and becoming more able every day than we are today, with places to apply my newfound ableness. And third, experiencing significance through affecting others' lives meaningfully. Pink's three concepts have been framed as something for an individual to have access to, as a separate being. It actually structures a reactive organization rather than a regenerative one. Work ends up structured so employees can avoid being influenced by one another. This is a primary source of creativity, learning to manage ourselves in the face of differences. But here's the most critical idea. The customer's outcomes become the reconciler, not the person closest to the work or in the old system where the boss decides. You have people talk from the shoes of their customers who they know from being on market field teams. Capability is built in ongoing, ritualized development processes for managing one's own state of being. Work with others purposefully for the benefit of stakeholders like customers while being evaluated by customers' responses. You don't try to manage the problems that lead people to say they want autonomy by avoiding the work they need to do on themselves to be with others. Secondly, purpose is not an individually contained experience. Pink's idea has led many people to thinking they as individuals have a purpose to serve. Purpose is something we serve that others are pursuing. Rather than I as a manager or employee having a purpose, we commit to helping our customers and other stakeholders achieve their purposes. There are other work designs where the organization seeks to have every person become a source of ideas for purpose and work, ultimately attempting to integrate that. In our approach, core teams and market field teams keep the focus on the greater whole. In traditional and alternative work designs, those who keep that connection to the greater whole often reside at the top. This leaves the work design of Holacracy applicable primarily to the bottom of the organization. That is, the doers, who include folks in manufacturing, customer service, sales floor, or lines and the like. This, by definition, does not work for the whole, but only parts of the organization. That's a strange choice and shows how it came from a class one error of hierarchy itself being the problem. Finally, Pink's third idea, mastery, is unachievable and, in fact, not worth pursuing. It fosters perfectionism rather than putting stretch into our lives by gaining more ableness over time on what we are committing to serve. In our next episode, number 114, we're going to actually take a look at a better alternative.
So we're back to some class one errors, which also underpin Holacracy. I believe that they're built off of these three misconceived ideas. The idea of autonomy is a class one error, since no human is or can be autonomous. It was based a lot on questionnaires and observation, reflecting from the mindset of a traditional system. And it led to a bit of strange ideas to think that autonomy was what people really wanted. If you ask people when they're in a traditional system what they want, they do want supervisors and all the pressure they feel to go away. But if you can get them outside of that, you get them past the pressure of being corrected and directed by others, then autonomy is not the most important thing. And most importantly, there's no aspect of real work that can be done autonomously. Work design needs to be built from the concept of evaluating process from earth to earth, where everybody plays a distinctive role. The idea of being autonomous works against the ability to see oneself nested in that, and that each person has and is required to have a way to directly bring more innovation into the work processes, into the work products, and into the people who are doing the work. What people want is an ability to contribute their uniqueness, to grow and develop, and then to experience that the effect they're having brings real significant meaning to other people's lives and therefore significance to their own.
If you want to learn more, download the free paper on discernment on our website, businesssecondopinion.com. Also, don't forget to visit Business Second Opinion on SurveyMonkey to recommend subjects we tackle in the world of business. Point to a particular business journal on which you want a Business Second Opinion. Next time, we've decided to add one more episode as we look into Holacracy. With our fourth part, we're going to be looking at the infrastructure that Holacracy has put in place to replace supervisors. Instead, we believe you don't need to replace anyone, but rather put in place a developmental infrastructure. This has been Business Second Opinion.